Our first case is Syncor versus Vicor, 2020-12-59, Mr. Horowitz.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. This case is controlled by Syncor 4. Both cases, Syncor asked this Court to vacate the decision of the Board that was moot the day that it issued.
But there was no happenstance here. The patent expired. You had 13 months during which time you didn't tell the board that the patent had expired. This isn't the same as the other Syncor case, and vacatur is equitable.
So respectfully, Your Honor, this Vicor made the same argument with respect to literally the identical 13-month period in Syncor 4. If you look at page 610 of the joint appendix, they say that Syncor sat on its hands for 13 months. They're talking about the same period from the expiration of the same patent family in January of 2018 through the decision of the board in that case, which issued on the same day in February of 2019. So literally the same argument concerning the same 13-month period was made and rejected in that case, and properly
so. But this is different. But the facts here were different, and you could have notified the PTO, and maybe we wouldn't be here spending our time if you had done that. And that's different than the situation in the other case, right?
It is not. As of the expiration of the patents, one family, they expire in January of 2018. As of the expiration of the patents, at that moment, there are pending before the board simultaneously the board decision here, as well as the board decision in the 190 appeal, the subject of Syncor 4, both simultaneously pending. In both cases, Vicor urged this court that our failure to notify the board during the 13-month period from January of 2018 through expiration in February 2019 was an equitable reason for the denial of vacatur. In Syncor 4, that argument was rejected. It is literally the same period. And it was properly rejected and applies here because we raised the expiration of the patents in the very first substantive filing that we made below. Now, honestly, we expected, given the remand from Syncor 2, which invited the board to reassess secondary considerations in light of some developments from another Syncor appeal, that there would be briefing on that question of what happens with the secondary considerations in light of the decision in an earlier appeal. So we were prepared to address that, as well as the expiration of the patents, once the board issued an order on briefing. That order never came. They just decided the merits after the expiration of the patents. And under the Patent Office's practices, what they say about re-exam, and this is in MPEP 2609, is that any paper not specifically called for in the rules shall not be filed. And in our experience in these re-exams, and there's been many with Vicor, papers that make arguments or submissions beyond what is expected have been consistently expunged. Now, Vicor apparently agreed that no submission was appropriate about the expiration of the patents because they didn't make a submission in this case or in the prior one either. Both parties simply waited for the board to issue its decision. Now, again, the argument was made in Syncor 4 that was an equitable reason to deny vacatur. It was not accepted. This case is indistinguishable in any material respect from Syncor 4. Now, there is one development I do want to address, which is the Apple v. Qualcomm case that was the subject of our 28J submission, and back in November. Now, the dividing line between our case and Apple, in our view, is the same line that the Apple court drew between it and the D.C. Circuit's opinion in the Aflac case. This is at footnote 6 of the Apple opinion. Aflac is a case like ours where mootness arose before the case reached the federal courts. Nonetheless, the D.C. Circuit said, well, this is moot. We don't want a decision sort of hanging out there and having potential legal consequence, so we're going to vacate, consistent with Munsingwear and U.S. Bancorp. When Apple was asked at oral argument about the justification for a Munsingwear vacatur in agency case where mootness arose before the notice of appeal, Apple cited Aflac. What this court said in Apple, was that Aflac is different because Aflac did not involve voluntary settlement as the basis for mootness, as Apple does. Now, if that's the dividing line, voluntary settlement, we're comfortably on the Aflac side with Syncor 4. where, again, Vicor made exactly the same jurisdictional argument about how the mootness arose before the case reached this court, or the federal courts in general. That's at 608 to 609 of the Joint Appendix. Court wasn't persuaded. The only distinction that Vicor identifies that's meaningful between this case and Syncor 4 is not sufficient to actually distinguish the case. That distinction is that Vicor says in Syncor 4, the court had jurisdiction, or what they call a jurisdictional foothold, over part of the appeal, the part that went to the original claims in the patent. Court had jurisdiction on the merits to consider those, did consider those. And Vicor says that somehow justifies the vacatur, based on mootness, of the new claims. They have this sort of theory of transitive jurisdiction, commutative jurisdiction. They don't cite a case that actually does that, and the reason is because the Supreme Court has explicitly rejected it. In Daimler Chrysler against Kuno and other cases, the court has said there is no such thing as commutative jurisdiction. You need to establish jurisdiction with respect to each claim for relief and each form of relief you're seeking separately. So the jurisdictional basis in Syncor 4 in this case with respect to the amended claims is the same. It's not jurisdiction to consider the merits. It's the power as part of the judicial process and administration to vacate decisions that have become moot through happenstance.
What is your view of, if I'm not mixing this up with another case, I think that Vicor is saying, well, if you all decide to vacate, you ought to tell the board to do or say certain things. Do you find that controversial or inappropriate or what?
I think it's inappropriate. I think it's certainly not what happened in Syncor 4. But the general rule that we would point the court to is that the idea of what's going to happen with a given judgment and the effect of that judgment or the effect of an opinion, what effect that should have, that's for a future court to decide in the context of a concrete dispute between the parties. And I wouldn't be surprised if it turns out to be this court and these parties. But the point is, you address the question of the effect of the decision in some future case. If the board turns out to be confused about what the significance of the vacatur is, as in the Valspar 2 case that Vicor cited, came back after a vacatur because the board did something unusual,
right?
Then, of course, as in Valspar 2, this court...
So what happened in the earlier Syncor case? Do we know? I mean, has the board acted on that yet? Or we send it back to the board?
That's
right?
Correct. So that Syncor case is back, but not on those claims.
Back here?
Back here. It's not fully briefed yet. It's not on the new claims. It's just that, and we'll argue that case another day, but Vicor believes that it can appeal other rejections in this new appeal that weren't the subject of the prior appeal. Basically, it's more merits on the original claims. In our view, it ought to have been over from the last appeal, if you read the opinion, but that's not presented.
But the view is, what we did in the earlier case and we did here is we send it back, if that's what we decide to do, and say, and the board just pro forma vacates its decision? How does this work normally? I don't want you to talk about your other case.
No, that's fine. What we think should happen here, and I don't think Vicor actually disagrees, I think they're just concerned about the possibility of, as in Valspar, of a misunderstanding, though they can speak for themselves. What we think should happen here is the decision should be vacated. Those claims can't be added to the patent, clearly, the amended claims. All of the claims that were the subject of the re-exam on the merits, we've lost. They are going to be canceled. So the re-examination certificate should issue, indicating that we lost on all the original claims that were the subject of the re-exam. And that's it. We don't want a further decision in our favor. We don't want any just issue the re-exam certificate. This is over. The only thing that we're here to fight about, which, again, honestly, after Syncor 4, this case was held pending Syncor 4. That's why the board decisions from the same day would be so far apart here. We thought that this would be just a joint motion to vacate because the cases were identical in our view. And that's why we said that should be held. They argued that they should be argued together. So anyway, at this point, the only thing we want to happen is get rid of this decision that could spawn legal consequence, which is the point of a Munsingwer vacatur.
The other side, Vicor, has an argument that the only way we have the power to vacate under Munsingwer these claims is because in Syncor 4 we had jurisdiction to consider the merits of other claims, and you're saying there's no case that points in that direction. They cite U.S. Bancorp, I believe.
They do. They cite The portion of U.S. Bancorp that's then quoting the, I think it's a Harlan concurrence in Chandler, talking about ancillary powers. But so that's not a case of commutative jurisdiction where the court is exercising jurisdiction to issue Munsingwear vacatur because of jurisdiction over the merits. Bancorp is a case where there was no jurisdiction, undisputedly moot across the board, and actually the court declined to issue a Munsingwear vacatur because as an apple there was the settlement. So factually it doesn't fit. And the Chandler case talking about ancillary powers, it's literally talking about the statute that empowers the court to appoint a clerk of the court. I mean, it has literally nothing to do with this idea of commutative jurisdiction. And it's not like Sinclair 4 is an outlier. Courts, including this court, have routinely vacated agency decisions that were moot before they reached the court. So in our brief, we cite, of course, Sinclair 4, this court's decision in Tunick, and then D.C. Circuit decisions, Aflac, the one raised at Apple, but also Tennessee Gas and M-Class Mining just last year in the D.C. Circuit. This is just ordinary practice under Munsingwear in our view. With that, unless there are questions, I'd reserve the balance of my time.
We will save that time for you. Mr. Baluch, is it?
Yes. Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. What we need to address is standing in light of the 28J letters that we filed with respect to the Apple decision. Apple makes clear that Sinclair's problem here today is not mootness, it is lack of standing, and that in the absence of standing, this court may not apply the Munsingwear relief. So this case is on all fours with Apple, and it is distinct from Sinclair 4, where there were live issues. There was standing, at least with respect to the original claims on appeal. And there is no conflict between Apple that this court decided and this court's earlier decisions, such as Tunick, because Tunick was an MSPB appeal, and Congress had passed a statute that expressly prohibited the MSPB from rendering advisory opinions. This court in Tunick found that statute was violated and vacated those advisory opinions for that reason, not because of Munsingwear, or indeed never citing Munsingwear or the Munsingwear progeny cases. With respect to the equities, I do want to point out that they talk about the 13-month gap. It is not the same relevant gap here as the timelines at the red brief pages 9 and 10 show. In Sinclair 4, there was only the tail portion of one claim, claim 34, that was subject of a new ground of rejection. That new ground of rejection was issued by the board in May 2016. New claims 35 through 38 were finally rejected, so those were definitely final. And it was merely a matter of addressing by the examiner and ultimately rendering final the rejection of claim 34. So the bulk of the claims, the new claims at issue in the Sinclair 4 re-exam, were finally decided prior to the expiration of the 190 patent.
But the only final appealable board decision from which the patent owner could appeal, that decision issued 13 months after the patent expired. Just like here, the patent expired 13 months before the patent board issued its final decision. Is that right? You're not suggesting that the initial board decision that included the new grounds of rejection that Sinclair could have appealed to the Federal Circuit some portions of that board decision?
They would have had to wait for the rejection of Claim 34 to become final.
Right. So in that sense, we have an apples-to-apples comparison with Sinclair 4 in the sense that we have, like here, a patent that literally expired 13 months before the board issued its decision.
But Sinclair could have, alerting the board as to the impending expiration on January 2018 would not have affected claims 34 through 38. So just, again, weighing the equities here, that it goes to the equities. Could have and should have Sinclair alerted the board here that you know, for 13 months leading up to the February 2019 board decision, that those, the only claims at issue were already moot. And
but claim 34 was not moot, right, in Syncor 4.
The damage was already done, Your Honor, by the board to claim 34. It was simply a matter of the examiner reconfirming that, considering that rejection and then adopting it.
Okay, so you can keep going.
We enumerate multiple routes that Syncor could have and should have brought, used to bring the expiration to the board's attention. The first one is very simple. It's the most direct. Simply file an amendment canceling those two claims. And we cite PTO Rule 41.63, titled Amendments and Affidavits or Other Evidence After Appeal. There is no time limit for a patent owner to file an amendment canceling claims during a PTAB.
Is there
appeal.
Anything that obligates them to have notified the board?
You know, I don't want to invoke a duty of candor, but I want to draw a distinction between their obligation to have alerted the board from coming here with clean hands and seeking.
Well, why didn't you? Could you have done it? Just to say, could have done it. Why didn't you?
Yes, well, it's for two reasons. The first is as not being the patent owner, and there was a dispute over the priority to this complicated chain of applications, including CIPs with new matter. There was a dispute that would affect the expiration date. And second, we did not docket the expiration of that patent. We were the appellee, and we understood that the board would simply decide the case on the briefing. But I think the upshot of denying Syncor's relief here is that all parties will be on notice that they need to docket and track the expiration of a patent.
But wait,
before
you
PTAB.
Just said, I don't understand, you just said there was a dispute or some lack of clarity as to the
yes.
When the patent is, so was that something that the board would have had to adjudicate or consider? Is that why the board didn't do this on its own? Because they didn't know whether or not the patent had expired?
I believe so. The terminal disclaimer, which ties the expiration of this patent to another patent, was not an exhibit that.
So you think if there wasn't the confusion, the board would ordinarily figure it out itself?
I do not think that the board monitors the expiration of patents, and the CFR and the MPEP don't say that the PTAB needs to constantly monitor.
Well, there's a difference between the word monitor and notice. I mean, we get cases all the time, and typically, even if it's not an issue or whatever, we notice when the patent issued and when it's set to expire. This is what they do. So I don't. Maybe there's no obligation, affirmative obligation for them to monitor, but you think somebody might notice, and your suggestion here is that they didn't notice because there was some confusion about that?
And I do not think that the board routinely has somebody checking the expiration of the patents that are pending on appeal at the PTAB. As I think this court also does not routinely do on its own, it is the obligation or at least the expectation of the parties to bring that to the board's attention.
Of course, the expiration doesn't eliminate the possibility of damages if a patent is valid.
Yes, with respect to the original claims. Mm-hmm. But the addition of new claims is limited only to the still pending, non-expired portion of the patent.
As far as what I asked your friend about, which is that you say if we send it back and tell them to vacate, they should include these caveats. Is there any case in which we've done that before in terms of explaining the consequences of a vacater? Is there another case you know where our court or some other court has done that?
I'm not aware of such instructions, but I was counsel to Valspar in that case, so I have lived through that experience of the board misconstruing a vacatur under Munsingware as reinstating the examiner decision, and that necessitated another appeal here, which is the real reason we want to cut off these Munsingware-only type of appeals, where there is no standing, and all that they're requesting is Munsingware relief, which is improper after Apple, when there is no standing.
And vacatur also wastes the effort of past tribunals.
Exactly right, yes. And that was, those were arguments we made to the in opposition to Syncor's request for rehearing at the board. We said that the public interest here does not favor vacating the board's decision, and at appendix page 15, the board agrees with us, citing specifically the pages where we made those arguments.
I'm not sure I understand the standing argument you're making, because obviously the patent owner in this instance received an adverse decision from which it wanted to appeal, and that's what happens typically when people appeal, and then Munsingware tells us sometimes there can be a mooting event, and when that occurs, then and the mooting event is something by happenstance, by circumstance, not anything that was within the control of the appellant, then it's pretty standard practice for the appellate courts to vacate the underlying decision because the appellant was denied the opportunity to challenge the merits. Why do we have to worry about standing in that context?
Well,
there was an adverse decision. It's sitting on the books. The appellate court, like us here, would have no power to overturn that decision. So why, under just normal, conventional Munsingware practice, they, in a sense, do have standing, or at least this court does have the ancillary power outside of your standard live case or controversy requirement to exercise our authority to vacate the underlying decision.
Syncor has not alleged that it has standing. Syncor has not alleged that it has any injury with respect to that decision. Merely that Munsingware can apply to a case where there was no standing at the outset.
But we have this opinion called Syncor 4 that came out that is identical in so many ways to the circumstance here. And it would look very peculiar for this court to issue this. I don't know what this is, Syncor 24, where we would say, we're going to do the precise opposite of what we did in Syncor 4.
Your Honor, respectfully, it would not be the opposite, because Syncor 4 first addresses the live dispute over the original claims, which gave the court jurisdiction, and there was standing to address it.
Let's put that to the side if I don't agree with that.
And immediately then we turn our attention to the board's decision on claims 34 through 38, and they grant the same relief that was sought, vacating the board decisions with respect to both the original claims and the new proposed claims.
So that establishes standing here and no standing there, because...
Well, the issue of cumulative jurisdiction was not addressed or briefed by the parties in Syncor 4. Certainly, Syncor 4 doesn't explain the ability to consider that. I think we just presume, based on what the court says, they moved directly from addressing the live dispute to addressing the ancillary issue. But here, there are no live issues. There never were on the day that notice of appeal was filed, which makes this case exactly like Apple. And with respect to standing...
Apple, there was a settlement, right?
Yes. Apple, there was a settlement, and here there is a patent expiration. Syncor concedes that there is no dispute, so there is no difference between those two, jurisdiction or controversy-destroying events. And with respect to the standard practice under Munsingware, the best argument that counsel, that Syncor raises, is this, the Bancorp statement about the requirements of Article 3 that indeed were never met. Sometimes it's italicized in the reply brief. But if you look at that sentence at page 21 of Bancorp, Bancorp's not talking about Munsingware vacatur in that sentence. They're talking about the ability of a court to take any action with respect to a piece of litigation once it has been determined that the requirements of Article 3 no longer are or indeed never were met. Next sentence, that proposition is contradicted whenever an appellate court holds that a district court lacked Article 3 jurisdiction in the first instance, vacates the decision, and remands with directions to dismiss. That's not mootness based on and vacating based on Munsingware. If a plaintiff files a complaint and has no standing, and the district court then issues merits decisions, that's an Article 3 violation, and on appeal, the Court of Appeals wouldn't be considering the equities and merits, and equities and under its discretion under Munsingware. The court must vacate that. It's not mootness. Only in the next sentence does Bancorp then say, in cases that become moot while awaiting review, so only then is it talking about mootness and Munsingware. And just finally, on the equities, imagine if this patent were expiring tomorrow, and we're here today arguing before you on the merits of the rejections, and nobody tells you that the patent is going to expire. You take the case under consideration, duly issue your decision, and only then, and affirming the board on the rejections, Syncor then files a request for rehearing saying that Munsingware requires you to vacate your decision, and then says, well, under Bancorp, the only thing that matters is we did not cause the patent to expire when it did. Indeed, Congress did by setting a 20-year term. So you need to, this court must then vacate its own decision. That clearly is an absurd result and is too much of a narrow focus when equity requires a broader purview.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Horowitz has some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to address the hypothetical and then make two quick points. So just on that last hypothetical, if we had argument before the board the day before the patent had expired, that would have been an opportunity for us to tell the board the patent was going to expire. It would also have been an opportunity for Vicor to tell the board that the patent was going to expire, and I would be shocked if neither side told the board the patent would expire. The problem was there were no substantive filings below between the expiry, you know, between at any point, actually, after remand until the board issued its decision. Now, the two points I want to make.
But theoretically, I guess in response to your opposing counsel's hypothetical, your position would be, yes, the Federal Circuit would be required to vacate its decision because it issued an opinion on an expired patent, or at least, I don't know, expired newly added claims.
No, I don't think that. And the reason is, as U.S. Bancorp makes clear, actually, even in the settlement context, it's a case-by-case assessment every single time. It's just that in this case, we have the facts that are in every material respect the same as in Syncor 4. That's what makes it easy. But of course, if we were to come, or Vicor, by the way, the appeal could have gone either way, just as it could have gone either way in this case. The losing party, after the hypothetical, comes to this court and says, by the way, the patent expired. You had one day to issue the opinion. We were counting on that one day. Didn't happen. And then court would have the equitable power to weigh the facts and circumstances. In this case, they're the same facts and circumstances.
Is the standard here abuse of discretion?
It isn't, and that's our position is laid out in the blue brief on that. We have a standard of review section. We explain that review is de novo. Now, Vicor could have disagreed with that. They don't have a standard of review section in their brief, which under this court's Rule 28B suggests that they agree with ours. So any argument that this is reviewed for abuse of discretion has been waived. But we don't think there needs to be an argument about that because it's clear in our view that the legal question of Munsingware vacatur is de novo. On Munsingware, I just want to just note, picking up on where Judge Chen was, you know, we disagree with the decision below on the merits. We think it's wrong. We're going to fight some of those same fights in future cases, including cases that are currently pending before this court, potentially. But we know that we can't ask the court to address the issues on the merits. That's why we're here asking for the Munsingware vacatur, and that's why Vicor is so vigorously opposing it, because it matters. This court shouldn't have to address what those future consequences may be. We shouldn't have to have a fight in a future case about those future consequences, because the decision should be vacated. It has been rendered moot through happenstance. We had no control over it, just as in Syncor 4. The last point I want to make is on the equities. You heard my friend say that this case is different from Syncor 4 on the equities. I want to go back to the joint appendix and just reflect on exactly what the court heard from Vicor in the last case. Vicor said, Syncor stood silent as its patent expired in January of 2018 and never brought it to the attention of the board, either prior to the board's February 20th, 19 decision or prior to Syncor's notice of appeal to this court in March of 2019. Every word of that sentence, the same argument you heard today and in the briefs. It's the same 13-month period. That argument was considered in Syncor 4. It was rejected. This case is indistinguishable in any material respect. The court should follow the outcome in Syncor 4 and vacate the decision below.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We appreciate the arguments of both parties, and the case is submitted.